Hello and welcome to the G2 podcast.
We're going to get started, so come and take a seat. I am so looking forward to this conversation today that we're going to have. This is Chris Bevington. If you don't already know him, please take time later on to get to know him. He's a great guy. Chris and I are pretty different to one another, and so we thought it would be interesting to do this conversation together, rather than one person doing a preach. We thought, oh, let's do it like a conversation and try to get into some of the principles behind why we give, behind our own generosity, behind what we've learned, and also be quite practical. So principles and practicality, also to share some stories behind it. And then we also want to speak a bit about where G2's at the moment and be open about that, talk through some of the finances. Hannah will help us do that, and Chris will chat with her later on about that. But just sort of wanted to reassure you that the topic of money and speaking about generosity and speaking about money is so biblical. It just isn't very British. And it just happens to be that Queen Victoria and everyone else around about that time just thought it was a bit awkward. So it's become a bit British to not do it. But Jesus was not the same as Queen Victoria and those people. He spoke about money a lot. And the whole of the Bible refers to finances and stewardship, as we just found out, a lot. So I think we just have to name that to burst the British bubble a little bit and get over ourselves, because not every community is like this, not every culture is like that. But we are a bit like that in these islands. So I think it's sort of, we got to agree together that it's all right to talk about it, because Jesus spoke about it a lot. In fact, he spoke an awful lot more about that than he did about the things that we spend our time arguing about a lot of the time. So I think it's important that we look at what he says and how that would affect us today. I think the product that I'm hoping for from today, like what will come out of it, is freedom. Whenever we give, whenever there's any kind of generosity, when we give away something, we get a little bit freer. One of the things Jesus says is you can't worship two gods, you can't serve God and mammon, mammon being like the god that is around money, or sometimes it's seen as signifying money, but equally the power that is held within money and the power that it can have over people. You can't serve both of those two things. You can't serve two masters. So whenever we give, we release some of that control that it can have on us, and particularly in our culture, we are pretty well provided for. And not everyone is. I realize everybody has different financial backgrounds, but there are cultures in the world that are pretty different to ours in terms of access to finance. But equally, then it can get a hold on us. So in us getting a little bit freer today in speaking about it, looking at what the Bible says about it, and learning from one another in the process, my hope is that we will become a little bit freer. But we are pretty different, aren't we?
Luke and I, as we've been preparing for this, we've met up, I think, 3 times to chat about money. And it has been really interesting, because I think both of us come at this subject from slightly different directions. But a lot of the things that we've then concluded and that we then do are actually quite similar. So I guess we've got a few kind of, after our conversation, we then sort of summarise that into a few kind of questions that helped us to have this conversation. So I guess, kicking off, in terms of your principles, what are the kind of principles that you live by in terms of your generosity and your giving?
Yeah, well, the way I'd answer that is some particular Bible verses that I've found to be absolutely rocks to rely on. One of them is Hebrews 2 verse 10, where it says everything belongs to God. So that's quite a simple concept, but it's crucial to this in terms of the stewardship thing that we just spoke about. Everything belongs to God. There isn't any money anywhere in the entire world that isn't already God's. Everything belongs to him. All finance, the Bible says that God has the cattle on 1,000 hills. I don't know about you, but I haven't got too many cattle, too many cows. But I do have things. And I guess when the Bible says about cattle on 1,000 hills, it's saying he has all of the stuff, all of the resources that is, and he can channel that where he needs it to go. He wants to do that when we ask, ask, seek, knock, and it will be given to you. Another one that I found really helpful, I've mentioned the one about mammon, which is in Matthew 6, verse 24, that you can't serve those two masters. Also, Matthew 10, verses 5 to 8, Jesus says, heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons, freely you have received, freely give. So that's a key principle for me as well. So everything is God's. I have received from him in abundance. That for me is a starting point to then think, that's why I want to give. Because he first loved me, therefore I love. I have received from God, therefore I want to give.
So would you sort of describe that as your main motivation? Is that what it is that gets you to give? Or?
Yeah, there's, I suppose, if I'm honest, some of the motivation is I've found it to be a lot of fun. So that is part of the motivation, is I love giving because I see what happens when we do give. And I think that, so that's part of it. But part of it is an understanding for me going, I actually get to be a channel of his resources. He writes me into his story, and it's all his anyway. But he lets me look after it, and he lets me steward it. And I think if we have that perspective, it can move around a lot quicker, including coming to us when we need it, but also being released from us. To be clear, I don't think, I'm definitely not coming from a prosperity gospel perspective. So I don't think you get rich by saying, I'll give and therefore he'll look after us. But I do think you don't lack for anything when you are part of his generosity. So that's one of my, and maybe attached to the freely you've received, freely give, one is 1 Corinthians 4, verse 7. And this one I cannot get away from at the moment. I've been living with this passage particularly for the last few months, which is when he says to the Corinthians are a well-off church. Some of them are like parading themselves at church and sort of showing off a bit. They're pretty well off. And he says to them, what did you have that you did not receive? And if you did receive it, why do you boast as though you do not? And I think that's a great challenge for all of us, certainly a good challenge for me. Everything I've got, all of my stuff, all of my money, all of my possessions, it is all stuff that I've received because it's all from him anyway. So that's been I've been challenging my own posture just in terms of thinking, what do I own? What is mine? And therefore, what do I struggle to share? Because I just go, well, everything I've got, I received anyway. I found that particular verse to be really challenging recently. And then my final principle that is from another scripture, Acts 20, verse 35. And you'll have heard me say this before probably. So it's in Acts, which is written by Luke. It is Paul who is saying this in Acts 20, verse 35. It's Paul who's speaking. Luke's writing a book saying Paul said this. But Paul said, I quote Jesus when I say, so you've got everyone involved in this passage, Paul quotes Jesus as saying, is more of a blessing to give than it is to receive. So I kind of think, for me, that is one of those things where it is easy to believe in a way when you're the giver, but when you're the receiver, it's hard to believe. So if you've received something, someone's given generously to you and you've received some blessing, it's really difficult to think, well, I'm really grateful for that thing, but it's better for the person who gave it to me. Or if you've asked for help and somebody has helped you, it was better for the person who helped you than it was for you, because it's more of a blessing than to give than it is to receive. And I think that's because we enter into this channel of provision when we give and we get a little bit freer. So it's better for that person. And the fact is, if everyone was doing that, it would be good for everyone. But it is also great when somebody gives to you, but it's more of a blessing to give than it is to receive. How about you, Chris? What are some of your principles?
Cool. That was really interesting. I was particularly interested in what you were saying then at the end about, you know, giving people the opportunity to give. I remember a particular time at university when there was a group and they were going on like a mission trip. And it was an opportunity to ask, you know, people were being encouraged to ask people to, you know, donate money. And I remember at the time thinking, I'm really uncomfortable about this. It all feels a bit weird. Why are we doing that? And the person that was leading it was saying, actually, by doing this, you're giving people an opportunity to give, and it's more blessed to give than to receive. So I was kind of, I remember being really challenged by that, and it was from that. Anyway, that wasn't what I was going to say. What I was going to say was when I was at uni, I spent quite a bit of time thinking about this subject because I was encouraged to by the kind of the person that led this little Bible study group that I went to. A lot of us were, I guess, students, and we were going to graduate, and then we were probably going to go and get jobs that were, you know, that probably paid more than the average in the UK, because that's what happens to most graduates. So he was encouraging us to really think about what we do with our money and our possessions before we graduate. And so I always look and to the person of Jesus, because Jesus talks about money and stuff like all of the time. This morning, in fact, I sat and I read a bit of Mark's gospel, and all the way through he just kept talking about money, and you know, he would always be comparing things to how people pay rent or how they do this or how they do that. So the person of Jesus, and basically it's in four interactions that he has with people. So the first one is the very famous story of Zacchaeus. So he was obviously a tax collector. He was going around swindling people out of money. He was taking advantage of his position. And then, as we know, he tries to see Jesus and interact with Jesus. And in response to what Jesus says, he says, I'm going to give away half of my possessions, half of everything that he's got, and I'm going to repay four times what I've swindled out of people. I mean, that is a pretty astonishing response to meeting Jesus. And Jesus could have said to him, that's really great, well done, you know, on you go. But actually he says, today salvation has come to this house. So Jesus sees real significance in the act of what Zacchaeus does with his money. His willingness at that moment to cheerfully basically give away loads and loads of stuff, Jesus sees as a, you know, it's a reflection of what's actually going on in his heart. The flip side of that is then the rich young ruler that comes to Jesus. And this guy, I imagine, is like almost like a young professional. You know, he's done a really good job. He's worked hard. He thinks he's kept all the commandments when Jesus questions him on it. You know, he's probably one of those people that we would sort of like look up to. But when Jesus says to him, he then says, what do I need to do to get eternal life? And Jesus says to him, go and sell all of your possessions, give it to the poor, and then you will have eternal life. And, you know, I think we'd probably sell Jesus slightly differently, wouldn't we? We'd probably say to, if somebody came that was like that, that had done a lot of good stuff, you know, that was quite well off, and they came and said, what do I need to do to have eternal life? We'd probably say, oh, you just need to believe in Jesus. You just need to follow him. Because, you know, and then we'd probably put him at the front of church and we'd say how amazing he was and all that kind of stuff. But Jesus saw past that, and Jesus could see that actually for this man, it was, you know, his money that was actually, you know, having a really significant hold on his heart. And Jesus says to him, go and sell all your possessions. He doesn't say that to everybody that he interacts with, but he does say it to this one particular guy. And this guy is sincere. You know, he's a genuine person. And he's sad because he realizes that actually money has got that hold on his heart. And he goes away. And then Jesus uses that as the opportunity. You know, the very famous comparison where he says it's easier for a rich man to get into heaven than it is for a camel to go through the eye of a needle. Because Jesus is realizing that it's wealth and it's money and it's stuff that gets so easily in the way for us. So Jesus was, you know, he was able to judge Zacchaeus's, you know, genuineness of his faith and his belief and where his heart really was at because of his willingness to give away. Whereas for the rich young ruler, he was able to see actually it was, you know, it was the opposite of that. And then I guess, so for me, Jesus is clearly seeing what we do with our things as quite an important thing. He doesn't see it as a side thing. He sees it as quite an important thing. And then secondly, the other thing is that in two other stories, you see Jesus' attitude to money being very different to society. So I think, like, imagine you were a financial advisor and somebody came to you and they were a poor old lady and they'd not got very much money left at all. In fact, they said, I've only got £2 left. The cupboards are bare. I've got nothing else to give. And I feel like I need to give this money to God. I think I would probably say that's probably not a very good idea. you know, there's lots of other things that we could be doing. Maybe you should just keep it and invest it. And then when you've got a bit more money, maybe then you could do it. But Jesus doesn't do that. And Jesus actually says, he actually calls the disciples over and says, you know, this, you know, doesn't criticize her wisdom at all and says, this woman has given everything. And I just find that astonishing. Whereas then this other guy comes to Jesus who says, he's a very rich farmer. And he says, oh, I've had a really great crop this year. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tear down my barns and I'm going to build bigger ones because then I'm going to be able to store all of these crops. And then I can probably relax. I can probably go and play some golf or something like that. Like, I know you like.
What a great idea. Yeah.
Jesus in this story says that actually, you fool. You fool. You know, tonight.
You set me up for that one, didn't
you? Yeah, I did. But he's saying, like, you know, tonight your life's going to be taken from you. And he's saying, actually, like, the wisdom of society, the wisdom of, let's say, like, I'm not saying Money Saving Expert isn't great, because Money Saving Expert is great. And I go on there all the time and, you know, to get advice. But actually, the wisdom of Jesus of what he thinks is going on is different, I think. And fundamentally, I think it's because Jesus has an eternal perspective of what's going on here, that everything belongs to God. Absolutely everything. And we're just asked to look after it for a period. And we're asked to do stuff with it on his behalf.
It's interesting with that one, well, and all of them, how easily we take Jesus, not directly, but interpret it to mean what we really want it to mean. I've certainly found that a challenge. When you think of, don't store all your stuff up in barns for tomorrow, it is pretty hard. And if you were to challenge yourself, to what extent do you really believe Jesus on that? To what extent do you kind of think, yeah, but like, it's really good to like save, and pensions are great. I have savings and pensions. I'm not telling you that. I don't think that's a good idea. But the extent to which we're able to say, actually, I've provided for myself hugely, so I never need to rely on God, we're just in that position. So I'm just saying it's a great challenge to think, did he really mean that then?
I think what's really interesting is that in each example, Jesus says different things to different people. And it's because we're all different and we all have, like, there's different things going on inside. I think the reason Jesus talks about it is, one, because of how important it is, but also because, you know, ultimately he's given stuff and we're told that, you know, we're going to be held to account. Like, God's going to say to you, he's going to say, oh, what have you done with what I've given you? And we know that we're going to be, you know, our salvation is with Jesus, and that's because of what he has done. It is absolutely nothing to do with us. We know that's why we're going to be with him for eternity. But he is going to say, oh, I gave you a lot of stuff. What did you do with it? And I was looking into this, and like, the average person will have like £1 million at the end of, you know, £1 million will have probably gone through your hands in your life. And every now and then I stop and I think, what am I going to say about that £1 million? Have I invested it wisely? Have I invested it in things of God? You know, I'm not saying that we shouldn't be spending stuff on the things that we need and doing nice things. That's not what I think Jesus is saying. But there is that question of, you know, the stewardship that we've been given, the responsibility that we've been given with what we've, you know, what we've got.
Mm. It would be good to talk a little bit about our practicalities as well. Let's try and bounce through this fairly quickly, because yeah, we've got loads that we'd love to say and probably don't have all of the time to do everything. But practically, what it looks like is different for each of us, right?
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly. I guess, what do you go first? Have you got an example of what do you do?
In our marriage, we set a 10% idea to start with. We're going to give 10% away, and then we've tried to increase that as the years have gone on, and it's about 15%, I suppose, now. We give to church, we give to charities, we give to individual missionaries and things like that. And we've also really enjoyed having some different seasons where we support a particular thing, and then we'll maybe move that to something else to pray into that. And I really love adding to our generosity and working, what's that going to cost us? When I say I really love that, I think I do really love that. The honest truth is probably Hannah loves that less. I don't think that's unfair, but we are together on our decisions with it as we gradually try to extend it and to give away more. But one of the things, one of the principles we brought in is to, and I think you guys might do this as well, is to say if we decide we're going to support someone or give to a charity or do something financially, we pray about it separately and write down what we think we're going to give financially, and we just agree we'll go with whatever is the higher amount. But I'm quite competitive, so I always try and win. But I don't always win, which is interesting. Sometimes Hannah says a higher amount. But I'm saying that partly because it's fun. And sometimes it's costly, because that's some of our... The principle is that it's costly. It's giving out of what we don't always have. So it's not necessarily just looking at, well, we've got this cash that's sat there. We don't give out of our wealth, like he said about the widow who gave the coins. She didn't give out of her wealth. She gave out of her poverty, or gave everything she had. So that's been fun. And sometimes we've saved amounts to give as well. So we've built up a little pot so that we can then pray about something spontaneous, or something comes up and we can respond to a need because there's a little pot of something that we can then give. We once put a load of 20 quid notes in envelopes and just went and blessed people anonymously, people that we did know. We've done shopping for people who are particularly in need. That was a great God story that was behind that, and just provided shopping for someone at Christmas that was in real need of that. We didn't necessarily know that detail beforehand, but this is all just to say we have a load of fun with it. Another bit of practical thing is we have in the past received bits of inheritance mainly from our parents, and then we've decided to give a portion of that as well, a higher portion than the 10%, because it was it just felt like a windfall blessing, a way more than we could have needed or whatever. So we decided to go out of our way to give that away. I feel like it can be uncomfortable for some people talking about this level of detail, but I do think it's important to be able to unlock in the room, like, this is just, we've all got money, we all give stuff away to different degrees. So just to make it normal.
I was going to say, I think that for me, when I was at uni, that was the thing. So this particular guy that was leading the group, he wasn't boasting and saying, oh, look what I do, but he was just demonstrating, some of the things that he practically did in his life. And that has inspired me. And I know for Kat and I, that's kind of one of the examples that we look to and think, well, how are we gonna do this? And quite a few of the things that you were picking up there are similar to what we would do. I'd say Kat is the more generous one in our relationship. So yeah, I tend to.
She's just the more competitive.
Maybe just, yeah, we'll go with that.
The other thing I've loved is when we passed the thing around for Fire Pit Fest and we've been giving in that way. That was kind of like a new way of giving for us at G2. It was new for me. I've not really done that before. Where you tap on, we have a shared bank account, Hannah and I, but we also have separate bank accounts for like little stuff. For me, that I usually spend that on golf. Hannah spends it on all sorts of different stuff that she wants to spend it on. But we've got like little separate pots basically. But we've given to this Fire Pit Fest thing out of our shared giving, but because it's infectious, I've just loved it. I've been like giving as well out of my golf pocket because I'm just like, this is great. I just think it's generosity begets generosity. So the more we are generous, the more you want to be generous. There isn't just like a finite pot of stuff that's available, and once it's gone, because all of the stuff's gone anyway. So the channel just continues to flow. How about you? Is there any other practical details? It works out differently for you, I guess.
Yeah. First thing is, I just want to say that I'm definitely on a journey with this. So I'm not sitting here saying I'm amazing at giving. Yeah, I'm sitting here saying I'm on a journey and learning, as I guess all of you guys are as well. And the other thing is that it struck me as we were talking this through that both of us are married to somebody that's also a Christian and also a believer. And I think if you're in the situation where that's not the case, this is even more difficult. At least Kat and I are in this together. And often when we're talking about it or we're planning our budget, at least we can, we're on the, we're coming from the same point of view. From a practical point of view, the thing I often struggle with is I think, well, Jesus sort of like told some people to leave everything and go and follow him. And I'm thinking, I don't know how I'd do that. But I think he also tells other people not to do that. So even the disciples. So you've got like the fishermen, and he says to them, like, come and follow me, and they just drop everything and follow him. But to Matthew, like the Levi, after he calls him, the next day they're having a dinner party at his house with all these tax collectors and stuff. So Jesus' expectation of what that meant obviously was different for different people. I guess for us, with that perspective of everything being God's, for Kat and I, we try and set our budget at the start of the month. Basically, the first thing is like, how much of that are we going to give away? And we try and give like primarily to G2, but also then there's other kind of charities and organisations and stuff that are on our hearts. Similar to you, when one-off money comes in, so it might be like a little bonus from work, or it might be a bit of an inheritance or a gift or something like that. We do try and stop, and sometimes we challenge each other, don't we, and go, oh, actually, like, it would be great to give some of this away. And that was my first experience with it as a teenager, when I inherited something and I got the chance to do that and anonymously gave it to something, and then saw the joy that came from that thing. And that was that really inspired me to think, I could, you know, amazing, what can be done with this. I'd say the other thing is, like, it's something to revisit all of the time. In preparation for this, I was then looking at our finances again and thinking, oh, actually, you know, maybe there's some more that we could do. And certainly in response to kind of part of what I'm going to share later, I know Kat and I will be reviewing like what we do and what we give. And the other thing is that I think when we're doing our budget, sometimes it can be quite uncomfortable. So, you know, when it all works and I do it all in Excel. It's probably not what you do, Luke. I don't know.
Well, it is what Hannah does.
Hannah does, yeah. So it's all in it's all in Excel spreadsheets with, like, okay, we're going to have this income and this might happen and these might be our costs, and that's just how I like to work. But, you know, there is a temptation to, like, delete the giving button and then go, oh, look, it looks a lot better now. But I kind of feel as though, like, the more that line comes down and doesn't quite work, the more that helps me to feel my dependence on God for how we're going to live. And yeah, I guess the final thing was just about it not just being money, but all the stuff as well. So when I was at uni, people were very kind to me in terms of, like, giving me lifts and, you know, lending me things and, you know, cooking me meals, that kind of thing. And I remember not feeling a bit like I can't quite repay these people, and them saying, well, you're not going to repay me, but you know, you can do that for other people. And so again, through some of the things that we then buy or have, it's like, do I hold them tight or do I offer those to other people? Kat's again much better than me at being, like, hospitable with our house. Like, we can have people around and invite them around. But that's part of, like, okay, we're gonna invest in this, but we're not gonna hold it on tight. We're gonna release it and let other people use it. And the final thing that I've learned, I guess, is about borrowing as well as lending. So if you really want something, if you can get the opportunity to borrow it, it, like, loses its hold, I find, over you. So, like, you know, if you've just decided, I really think I need to get this, and you can be thinking about it, but then if you get the opportunity to borrow it, do, because you, after, like, a few days, you can be like, oh, actually.
Yeah, I've experienced that, actually. I really, really love pressure washing. Like, it's probably an issue. I think it's so satisfying. Anyway, I really wanted to buy a pressure washer, but they are quite pricey. But I borrowed one off a friend, and that did mean that I didn't need to spend the capital there. So it means there's more to give away. Not that I just immediately gave that away, but it does mean we're not wasting money on all owning pressure washers. We don't, do we? We don't. Not everyone in this room has one. But yeah, I totally agree with you. Can I ask you, the Bible says quite a bit about tithing. Well, that's a concept in church that we are aware of. What do you think about tithing?
So yeah, we probably haven't got long enough to go into this in great detail, have we? But the way I see it is, I've seen it as a really practical way of knowing kind of what we should be doing as a good starting point. Because you sit there and you think, oh, should I be giving, like I said, should I be giving everything away? Like Jesus said, you know, everything's his. Or should I be giving like a little bit? So I just think that the concept of tithing is quite a useful place to start. But I don't think we're bound by it. Again, this is probably like a whole sermon in itself, in the way that, you know, people were in the Old Testament. But I just find it quite a helpful way of, you know, if you've not done it before, like thinking, okay, this is a good place to begin. Let's go from there.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I agree. I think Yeah, just because I personally struggle with rules in general, and so have battled throughout my life with religion as a concept. And if religion is, you know, the way we follow rules that are oriented around God. But I guess I see Jesus saying, but I've offered everything. I've given you everything. And what he asks in return is all of us. It's our whole life. And so for me, tithing is kind of done away with in a sense, where in the Old Testament it's necessary. But it's fulfilled in Jesus, and then it frees us to be able to give all that we are and everything we had. The early church shared everything, all their possessions, and even when, I guess what I really struggle with is when people get religious and controlling about you must tithe, because then what do they mean by that? Probably they mean 10%, but actually in the Bible you could say it's a fifth in some of the readings of it. Well, that's 20%, and it says first fruits. So do you mean before tax? So are we all giving 20% before tax? Probably not. But I'm only saying this by way of saying let's just undo that concept. But I'd go back to where you started, which I think is a pretty helpful principle to have, like a bit of a start of a 10 to get us going. So yeah, I think that's useful.
Have you got any good stories?
Yeah, I've got loads of good stories. But you haven't got that particularly long. Around this,
yeah
just a good stories in general. We've seen some great stuff happen at G2 over the years in this particular area, partly because we often have a lot of young adults who are new to having their own bank account, who are new to learning how to have a job that's getting pay rises and how to navigate their finances and their generosity, their giving. And so we've seen some real shifts happen over the years, and they've been fantastic. We did a thing once where it was called the Generosity Challenge, the 90 Challenge, where we said, we'll challenge you to give way beyond what you think you can afford for 90 days. We'll hold that money as G2, and then you can see whether you want it back. Did God provide? Are you okay? Is that all right? Just as a way of testing the generosity. Is the only place in the Bible where God says, test me in this. He says to give a full tithe into the storehouse and see if I don't unlock the blessing of heaven on you. Test me in this. So he doesn't usually say to test him. And that released a whole load of generosity where people were like, okay, I'll try this out. So we've created that freedom. Equally, we did a thing where we put a load of facts and figures together for the different demographics that are in G2. So students, young professionals and families and other people as well. And we're like, if you look at these as people groups, this is where we are at. And it highlighted particularly to the students at the time that 17% of all of our students at that point were giving. And so we were like, well, if you want to not give, you're probably pretty normal, pretty average. If you're a student, most students who go to churches don't give to the church that they go to. So we're able to challenge that. And over the course of the next few weeks, it went up to 73% from 17%. And I loved seeing that happen. One student gave £1,000. And I don't know who that was. I'm not aware of anyone who gives what they give, but I was made aware that there was a student who had given £1,000, and it was just like, wow, you'd never know what somebody is able to contribute, and they were just able to do that. They were blessed to give it, more than we were to receive it, if you know what I mean, which sounds crazy. That's what it sounds like, the wrong way around. And to illustrate that point further, there's a great story of a lady who was asked to give. Now, this lady had gone through a really tricky time and was asked to support a missionary. And this missionary really wondered about whether, should I ask this lady? Now, she'd lost her husband and one of her children, and two of her other children had extra needs, and basically life was tough. She didn't have loads financially, and everyone had supported this lady as she'd gone through what you can't imagine. And people had given to her all sorts of types of support. And this missionary said, I feel like I really want to ask you, would you give to support me as a missionary? I don't know if you can afford to. I don't know where your situation is at, but I wondered whether you would give. And this lady burst into tears and said, you have given me such dignity by asking me to give, because everyone gives to me. I'm always the one who is receiving the generosity of others. But you're the first person since all of this hardship has happened that's given me the dignity of being a giver. And I would love to be able to give to you and support you as a missionary. So I find those stories helpful to kind of flip things on their heads a bit for how we would imagine it to be. How about you?
Yeah, it's amazing. I was just sort of reflecting on the, you know, since Kat and I have been married, and there have been times where we've given money, even though like the budget doesn't say that that's going to be okay, and yet our experience has been that it has. And I'm not saying that, like, it's not prosperity gospel. I'm not saying that we give in order to receive loads of stuff and money. But I'm just speaking from my experience of, like, the times that I've trusted God with that a little bit more, that things have worked out. On the totally other side, there was an amazing story that I read in a book about John Wesley, you know, brother of Charles Wesley, and he was riding along on a horse, and this guy runs up to him shouting, going, Mr. Wesley, I've got some terrible news. And he says, oh, what is it? And this guy says, I'm really sorry, but your house is burnt down and you've lost like everything. And apparently John Wesley stopped and looked at this guy and then went, that's not bad news. Everything, it was not my house. It was God's house. Everything was God's. And now I've just got one less thing to worry about. And that story, I was told that story years ago, and it's just always stuck with me because I thought that is a bizarre way of thinking about the world. I do not have the freedom that John Wesley clearly had with stuff.
Imagine being that guy who's like, run 200 yeah. miles to tell John Wesley. And he's like, oh.
Yeah, I said, never mind.
I shouldn't have bothered then.
Yeah, yeah. John Wesley really wasn't that bothered by it. But yeah, I just find that really interesting, the freedom that had obviously come for his experience.
Okay, so Hannah, will you come and help us chat through some details about G2?
I'll call Hannah up in a minute.
All right, okay.
So I guess part of what we're talking about today is about, the fact that actually... as Christians, as well as, you know, having this concept of giving, part of what we do give to is church and to G2. So I believe, and this is me talking personally now for myself, is that as Christians, we're called, I think, kind of primarily to give money to our local church and congregation. It says in Galatians 6, it says that the one who is taught the word share all good things with the one who teaches, which I think is suggesting that we need to support those that lead and teach us. And I think in our modern society, a way that we do that is by supporting the local church. Now, as Luke said earlier, this, you know, the whole thing today is not about just saying, you know, G2 needs more of your money. But what I am going to do is, as an ordinary member of the congregation, like you and I, I'm just going to explain the financial situation and of G2. So I think there's some slides that are going to appear in a moment. So I was just jumping down so that I can see the screen at the same time. So G2, I think it's helpful to just understand what the structure of our church is before we go into too much more detail. So the way that G2 works is that we've got these like three bodies that oversee the work of the church. So there's the senior leadership team, which is about vision, culture and direction. Church council, which I am a member of, which is about governance, finance and safeguarding. And then there's our staff team. So I think there's some photos that might come up for each of these three. So yeah, this is our... So I don't know how many of you actually know who are on these different groups. So senior leadership team are these lovely five people who hopefully you know. And like I said, they're about the vision, sort of the direction that the church is going in. And they meet regularly and they pray and they kind of come up with what we're going to be learning and the direction that God's calling us. The next group is the church council. So you might not recognise many of them on here. So I'm on there. Alison is on there as well. She's waving over there. So Alison's our like safeguarding lead. And then there's various other people here. So we're technically overseen by the PCC of St. Michael of Belfry. So we're kind of a subgroup of that. So there are people, so Andy and Melissa are from the and Joe are from the Belfry. Sam's the Archdeacon. And then David Caswell is from St Hilda's. So this group is about, you know, we meet less regularly, and this is about making sure the money's sorted, the safeguarding sorted, and it's about like policy and process and making sure things are done well. And then finally, there's the staff team. So these guys are amazing, and they do a lot of work to keep this church going, to keep all the ministries that are done running really, really well. So as you've seen on there, Kat does appear on that list. So although I'm here as a member of church council, I want to be transparent, and Kat does work for G2, and she does take a bit of a salary from G2 for that. So Hannah, would you mind coming up? So I've just explained the structure. Technically, we're part of the Church of England, but we're not in any way funded by the Church of England. Is that correct?
Yeah, not at all.
So there's no money from the Church of England.
Whereas, it, like, pretty much every other Church of England church, the vicar would be paid from the Church of England. Yep. Like, that's called a stipend, and they'd get a house. Yep. So whereas we don't.
We don't have that. So as G2, we basically... Most of the money comes in from regular giving from you guys, basically, as members of the church. And then we do hold like a small reserve, don't we? Which is basically enough money to pay the staff for 3 months.
Yeah, and like building costs.
Which is, so that's just as a charity, that's a good thing to have. But beyond that, we don't have any other assets. We don't have a building. We don't have the ability to like hold events and charge money for that. We don't have any silverware or, you know, like some churches
have. A big sword or something.
Yeah, stashed away. So we've got none of that. So literally what we've got is the money to be able to do to cover the bare minimum.
Yeah.
So I guess this structure is a bit weird. Can you explain why the structure is like that?
So our leadership structure is unusual. I was at a leadership event recently, and I said something along the lines of none of the SLT are on staff team, and the person I was talking to just went, why? And I was like, why not? Like, why would you assume that should be the way? But I think that often is the way. I think our staff team are basically ministry leaders, and that's where, like, we pay them to release their time so that they can invest in people. And I think our whole structure, I hope, reflects how discipleship is at the heart of who we are, and it works so that, I guess essentially, like in lots of churches, and this works in lots of churches, I'm not criticizing them, that the leader might be like the teacher, the preacher, like the saver of souls, the kind of always almost like doing everything. And that's not really like the way I lead, definitely, and it's not our church model. Like, our church is a family, and everyone gets to play a part, and we're all like learning from each other, and that's why we see so many different people up at the front and doing different things. And I think my role is like I hold the passion and the heart for that, and I spend a lot of time meeting up with people, releasing, equipping, and letting people grow and become leaders. I think the thing that we haven't seen in those slides is the 32 people that have positions of leadership in G2, which is nearly half of our adults. So we gather as a wider leadership team every other month, and there's 32 people invited to that. So that's worship leaders, people that lead meetings, people that lead small groups, people that preach, people that are involved in kids work, and that's also a space where people can come and explore leadership as well. And so it's really like, I guess, bottom heavy, like we just release leadership, release people to grow as disciples.
I think that's amazing. And certainly, like, Kat and I have got three children that most of you have met, no doubt, and talked to. But one of the things that I love about this church is the fact that all three of them get spoken to by so many of you. And it really does, I think, feel like we're a family.
Yeah.
And just I love the fact that there are so many people that get involved in like leading things, doing things behind the scenes. It really is a church of people that do stuff, and I think that's great.
Yeah, and I think I often like lose track of that. So I was chatting to a vicar recently, vicar of a big church, and they have like three or four clergy on the staff team. And on Ash Wednesday there was supposed to be like special service in the evening, and all of the vicars came down with the same sickness bug, and so they had to cancel the service. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, if like me, you and Luke all got a sickness bug, there's like 20 other people that can like lead a service, or you know, do a talk, or what, all of those things that are needed. I was like, oh, I didn't I thought this was normal. Sometimes I think this is normal, but I think it is quite unique to GT.
So I guess that leads on to the next question, Hannah, which is, like, what is the vision of GT?
Well, it is discipleship. So it's making disciples who make disciples. So it's like it's a continual process of all of us are growing as disciples, but also helping others to be disciples. And our little, like, tagline is discover, live, tell, but it's there for a reason, and it's in a circle for a reason, because it's like all of us are discovering more about Jesus, discovering more about hope, discovering more about who we are, and then those things become like how we live, so that becomes part of our life, it becomes embedded in who we are, and then what I really hope is out of that flows telling others and like sharing that with others, that our lives become like this overflow nature, and then we get back into discovering more, and then we continue to grow in like living that out, and then sharing that with others, and then others come into that, don't they? Because as we tell people, like, they're then discovering it, and then they're coming in, and it's like, yeah, this lovely circle that Jack Niles designed for me, that just like flows, like it just captures who we are. I think this, we're just going round all the time.
That's brilliant. Cool. So what I'm going to do, I think you've already had a sneak peek of it because I think it's just been on the screen, but hopefully it is about to appear, the expenditure for 2024. So this is just to explain to you all, this is what our budget is for this year, running from January to December. So there's a total there of £96,000. And what I've tried to do is just split that into like areas to just kind of give you an idea of the different ministries and how much those cost for a whole year. So you've got in there, so just starting in the top right, so you've got families, youth and kids. So that includes things like the work on a Sunday and the work that Fiona does. And as well as that, there's kind of like youth nights, which have been kind of evangelistic. I think there's been quite a few friends of the youth that have come along to those events. There's the student budget on the bottom right. So that includes student worker costs. There's various ministry costs. Because we had a shortfall in 2023, and so one of the things that happened is we managed to get a grant. So quite a lot of the costs of what Addo does is actually funded separately by a grant rather than through the work of the church. But it would be great in the long term to be able to be funding that ourselves. There is operations, which is the operations administration costs, administrator costs, digital editor and office space. At the moment the team use the Belfry offices, but actually that's going to be coming to an end shortly, so that's one of the areas that we need to be praying for. Sunday gatherings, so that's the cost of this building, so it costs £10,000 a year just to rent this space, so that's a significant outlay of our costs. But then there's extra costs associated with putting on the Sunday services. The giving, so that's giveaway there. So that's where we give money to the diocese to try and help fund other things that are going on within the Church of England, as well as Fusion, IJM, there's partners, mission partners that are in Brazil, and James and Tash that are in the Middle East as well. Leadership and pastoral. So a lot of what Hannah was talking about there was how she uses her time to build up people within the church. So I think it's amazing that we have so many leaders, but that doesn't come for free. That comes from the fact that we have Hannah and we have others that are able to invest so much time in people to build them up, to be able to do leadership roles. So I guess another question for you, Hannah. This is the budget that we've set, and this basically covers the costs of what we do at the moment. But do you have aspirations for other things? Do you think there are other things you'd like to see?
There's definitely other things we can do. I find this question really hard. Like, if you know me, you know that like I'm really good on detail. So if someone gives me a vision, like I can tell you all the things we need to do to get there. But if someone goes, what's like your dreams for the next 10 years? I'm like, just to be alive. I don't know. So I've had to dig deep for this. But also part of the reason that I struggle is because I'm like, this isn't my vision. This is our vision. Like, I kind of want to say, what do you want to do in the next 5 years with G2? What do you want to do to share the gospel, to grow disciples? But just some ideas that have come from me and from other people. So our digital resources, we used to make our own small group resources, and we paid Toby to edit them. When Toby moved on, we didn't replace him because we couldn't afford to. So we are no longer making our own resources for small groups. We have been trying out some other resources, which I think are landing in different ways in different groups. But ultimately, like, we could do with putting some money into that, whether it's to pay someone to edit our stuff or whether it's to get some really good quality resources that we could be using as a church. I think this building is amazing, and the connection to the community is amazing. And I know a lot of people have talked about, how can we reach this community better? Could we do some sort of community fun day regularly where we can invite people in? We did Christmas and Carols, which was all come from one small group, did that at Christmas. And we saw how people just came in. They came in from the library, they came in from outside, they sat, they stayed, they connected. So, like, how could we do more with that if we had more money? We've been talking a little bit about starting some sort of like prophecy cafe. So I don't know how to word this without it sounding weird, but basically people are so open to the spiritual stuff, and they go to tarot reading and horoscopes and all that sort of stuff. What if we could offer a chance to pray for people and let God speak to them, let their creator speak to them, instead of like these made up weird spirits? I would love a more permanent space. Like you said, office space would be great, but wouldn't it be amazing to have a space that we could also use for our youth nights, that we could use for filming the podcast that we're doing, that we could use for leadership evenings or pastoral meetings? Like, I'd love a better space for that. Would also like to be investing in people more and releasing more of that. And then one other thing was like worship development. I think at the moment God's really calling us into a deeper worship and like really changing our worship. But it's really rare for a church not to have a paid worship leader. And I'm not saying let's have a paid worship leader, but I would love to invest in our worship and in the worship team that we've got, in helping them to write their own songs, to release some time, all that. So those are some of the things. But like I say, I think there's so much more that we could do.
I think that's amazing. I know Hannah had to work really hard on that.
Well, I want to be alive.
But yeah, I mean, so this is the budget that we've got, but wouldn't it be amazing to do even more stuff? So I'm going to flip to the next slide, which is the income slide. So as I mentioned before, if you look at that, the big sort of turquoisey colour is that regular giving slot. So the majority of the money comes from people in this congregation giving of their money sacrificially, and that is amazing. And I just want to say a huge thank you to everybody for what they do. You can see then there is a gift aid. So those of you that pay tax, if you can make sure you've like ticked the box and everything, then you'll get gift aid, which adds quite a significant extra bit of income, £12,000 up there. As I mentioned before, we had the shortfall in 2023. And so we've got this grant for student worker, which goes towards Addo. And so that again is amazing. And then there's an alumni section, which is, you know, Luke was sharing some stories about previous G2ers, and there are some of them that do actually give a bit of money towards what we do, which again is amazing. However, there is that little section that's cut out of the pie chart, which is the gap. So at the moment, you can see that there is a shortfall of almost £12,000. Now, that is based on the regular giving being the same as the regular giving from 2023. Last year we actually ran a deficit, so we had a bigger part of money that was set aside, and we've had to eat into that quite considerably in 2023, and I think in 2022 as well. So we're at the situation now where we've got, you know, we've got enough to do what we need to do as a charity, but we really don't want to be eating into that again at the end of this year. So it would be great if we could fill this gap and possibly even do more. I don't know how much, I don't know who gives, and I don't know how much each person here gives. So I'm not stood here looking at people thinking that you know I know what you give. But I would prayerfully ask you to consider what it is that you give at the moment. To give you an idea, there's 45 people that give by direct debit. And of those that do, there's a very vast range between, you know, people that give £2 a month up to people that give £1,000 a month. So it is a big range. I think the average is about £100 a month. And I'm just sharing that with you to be transparent. So it would be amazing to see see that gap being filled. I tried to work this out into some kind of way that was a bit more meaningful. And the best I could come up with is if every adult in G2 was able to give basically an extra £3 a week more, so that's, you know, like a cup of coffee a week more than they do already, then we would cover the deficit immediately, which is amazing. Now, in reality, I know that for some people, they won't be able to give any more than they're currently giving. But for other people, that you might be able to give more. So I'm just giving this, like Luke mentioned earlier, this is an opportunity. There's no obligation. It is just an opportunity to do so if you can. On the screen here is how to give. Hannah very helpfully explained to me that there is a difference. So if you are a new giver, you can go to g2york.org, give, and it is really simple. I had a go at looking at it over the weekend, and you just literally go on there, you type the amount in, you click whether you pay gift aid, and it just gets it set up for you. If you already give, you can log in to Church Suite. If you can't remember your password, you can click a button that tells you to have to reset your password, and it is that simple. You can go on and you can manage it and you can change it and you can see how much it is that you are giving. I just kind of wanted to end. It feels daunting that it's £1,000 a month, but actually, like in January, we've raised, I think it's over £1,500 already for Fire Pit Fest, which is fantastic, which is absolutely amazing. So it is doable, and it's not impossible. And like we said before, like if this ministry is something that God wants to happen, then I have every confidence that it will happen.
Hello, and thank you for catching up with the talk from Sunday. I know that it was a little bit longer than usual, but it was so good to be able to share more about the vision and direction of G2, the structure and the reality behind the finances. We really want to give every person a chance to consider or reconsider their giving. And so on Sunday, what we did next is we handed out a short form and we encouraged everyone to tick a box. So even though you are listening afterwards, I would still love to give you this opportunity. Rather than taking you through the options now, which might get a bit complicated, what I'd ask you to do is just send a message to me, Hannah, or over to Kat, and just say, I finished the money talk. And then we can send over the options for you to think about. There is absolutely no pressure or expectation. And one of the options is I can't change my giving at the moment, and that is totally fine. All I'm praying for is freedom in all areas for all of us. And so may God bless you today.